Welcome to Terrence Point Cafe Magic Drugstore Lobster Cookie Bar. I am your waiter. Bonjour.
Bonjour to you, too.
Actually, bonjour is my name.
Oh, I'm sorry. I bet everybody does that, huh?
No, you're the first. Have you dined with us before?
Nope.
Well, we do things a little differently here.
How so?
We give you a menu, and you pick out the things you want, and we bring them to you. At the end of the meal, we bring you a check, but it's actually a bill you have to pay.
I'm pretty sure that's what all restaurants do.
I think you'll find that's not the case.
I have a question about this item on the menu, the roasted corn Nutella Danish smoked trout mousse.
I know. Before you say another word, I know. You're thinking, that whole trend is as played out as the skillet red potatoes duck Benedict bear claw American caviar macaroon. But you have to try our chef's quinoa version.
Oh, I don't like quinoa.
Oh, no. Quinoa is the name of our chef.
Okay, well, what's the ice water shumai?
You're joking.
No.
Ice water shumai is everywhere. We're hardly the first to introduce it.
Oh, well, I still don't know what it is.
Would you mind terribly if I pointed you out to the other staff and patrons? It would give them a lift on a dreary day.
No pointing me out. I'm leaving this restaurant.
Without trying the compressed melon frosted Peking financier pork babe rum?
You're just stringing words together now, aren't you?
Snickerdoodle.
Today on the show, Cupcakes and Beyond, we plunge into the forest of food trends. And now, the inventor of Kobe Chicken, Colin McEnroe.
Yeah, I thought Kobe beef was so popular that Kobe chicken would just take off. And so I raised the chickens, I massaged them, which is, the chickens don't even seem to enjoy that much even. I did all the Kobe stuff. And nobody wants it. At least not. I'm charging $80 a pound, and it's just not happening. All right, so I lost my shirt on Kobe chicken, and that sort of illustrates the fickleness of food trends, right? Something that makes absolute crystal clear sense to me is a disaster in the marketplace. And they seem to come unbidden from almost any place. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to start with the cupcake, because we have to talk about the cupcake. But we're going to move into other food trends and sort of talk about where they all arise too, because they're not all the same, right? There can be just a basic food thing like the cupcake, and then sometimes it's more the sort of farm to table thing, the artisanal thing. They're sort of food concepts. Some of them arise from chefs. Some of them arise from entrepreneurs, farmers who come up with the goat cheese caramels or caramel goat cheeses or whatever. You'll learn about all this stuff to whatever extent we have time today, which means I should shut up and introduce the guest, David. Sachs is a freelance writer and the author of The Tastemakers, Why We're Crazy for Cupcakes but Fed Up with Fondue, plus Baconomics, Superfoods, and Other Secrets from the World of Food Trends. In studio with me is the Energizer Bunny of Food, Chris Prosperi. He's the chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury. He's a regular on WNPR's Food Schmooze with Faith Middleton. Although we have lots of food in the studio, thanks to Chris and one of our other guests whom you're about to meet. This is not the Food Schmooze. There'll be no ooing. There'll be no eyeing. No one will be allowed to demonstrate any pleasure as a result of food. And then Carrie Corella is here. She's the owner of Nora Cupcake Company. We've been like kind of the Nora Cupcake Company diet here at WNPR recently, and it's not really working out for us, although they are delicious. That's sort of the problem. Oh, boy, I had one the other day. I'll have to ask you about that one. Anyway, so David Sachs, I'm going to just begin with you. You traveled all over the place looking at food trends. Your book is kind of divided up into sort of different kinds of food trends and where those food trends come from, ranging from, you know, just individual farm couple entrepreneurs to big companies using big data to figure out that they can basically get us to drink and eat about 60 times more pomegranate stuff than we were. But you know, maybe we can even begin with something as basic as the cupcake. I'm a man of a certain age. The cupcakes have been around all my life. But suddenly they're around in a completely different way. So how does that happen? You think it's kind of at least partly driven from a certain media moment, right?
Yeah, I would say that the cupcake is what I would, you know, classify as a cultural food trend in that it's not something new, unlike your Kobe chicken, which, you know, who knows, one day it could take off. It takes something that already exists, something that everybody knows, people grew up with, people have memories of, and it repurposed it. It gave it a whole new narrative. And it was very much a media-driven trend. You know, the cupcake trend started in New York City and in Greenwich Village in the mid-1990s when Magnolia Bakery happened upon making a batch of cupcakes that became really popular and more people were requesting them. They didn't set out to make cupcakes. It wasn't even on their original menu. But as word of mouth spread, the media word spread with it, and it really sort of grew up until 2000 when the show was featured in one sort of cameo episode of Sex and the City. And, you know, it's a 20-second clip of Carrie and Miranda eating cupcakes. But what that clip did was it changed the narrative of the cupcake. The cupcake was no longer something for kids. It was something not just for adults, but for single women who embrace their sensuality, independence, and consumerism. You know, it was the edible Jimmy Choo heel. It was sort of the family-friendly rabbit vibrator. All those other products that came out of the show and were associated with everything that, you know, the Sex and the City lifestyle had. And this show was tremendously popular across the nation. And this episode happened to air right around the same time, or just before, and then in syndication many times after, September 11th, when a larger culinary trend and a larger sort of eating trend in America was reflected in the way people were feeling, and that was fear and uncertainty. And in times of fear and uncertainty, we move away from exotic things like Kobe chicken foam or nitrogen Kobe chicken to comfort foods, to hamburger and mac and cheese and grilled cheese and all these things. Whether you put an artisanal spin on them or not, whether you make them gourmet or not, they still have a place in our heart and in our fond memories. And the cupcake is kind of this edible security blanket. So these things all happened at once. And the reason why it grew so big, unlike, say, the muffin trend or the croissant trend of the 1970s, is because it coincided with the birth of the internet. And, you know, not the Al Gore internet, but the rise, you know, the cupcake shop, Magnolia Bakery. I mean, that trend locally started in New York in the mid-90s. And as it grew.
And not to interrupt you, but also, as you point out in the book, one of the first really popular YouTube videos was, in fact, this Saturday Night Live derivative. A couple of guys rapping about how they like to spend a lazy Sunday. And we'll hear just a little bit of that right here.
Lazy Sunday, wake up in the late afternoon. Call Parnell just to see how he's doing.
Hello,
what up, Porn?
Yo, Sandberg, what's cracking?
You thinking what I'm thinking?
Party up!
Man, it's happening.
But first, my hunger pains are sticking like duct tape.
Just hit up Magnolia and Mac on some cupcakes.
No doubt that bakery's got all the Bob Frosty.
I love those cupcakes like McAdams loves Gosling.
Gosling.
Gosling, Gosling, you got to go to Magnolia and mac on some cupcakes. So, David Sachs, as you say, this sort of coincided with the rise, not of the Al Gore internet, but the rise of the ability of something to go viral, something to be spread very quickly on the internet.
Exactly. And that was the first one. That Andy Samberg skit, the Lazy Sunday video, was actually one of the first viral comedy videos that went around the internet. I remember writing an article about it in 2003 or 2004. And so, you know, cupcakes fit into all these areas. In the early 2000s, as broadband penetration started, you know, spreading across the country and cupcakes were growing out from New York City and out from Magnolia Bakery to these other places, that's when you saw the rise of food blogs and hundreds and then thousands of cupcake blogs. Facebook was the perfect venue to sort of talk about cupcakes and share photos of cupcakes and recipes. Then Twitter came along and accelerated that conversation. And then you know, you have Pinterest, which was all about sharing recipes. And finally, the rise of Instagram, which, you know, it was just, here's a photo of what I ate. Here's a cupcake. Here's a cupcake. Here's a cupcake. Here's a cupcake.
And, you know, I want to go to Chris Prosperi for a second, because I think this is sort of another thing that may have changed. Here you are, you know, this, you know, acclaimed chef who makes it a point to have his finger on the pulse of all kinds of food trends, and you're on the food schmooze. You couldn't be more credentialed. But I would imagine that because of the phenomenon that he's talking about right now, food trends can spread sort of outside the purview of the experts, right? You know, people can be blogging and talking and watching some obscure show on the Food Network or something. You probably have people come into your restaurant and mention some food trend you've never heard of.
Yeah, and we get caught off guard almost, because how do you keep track of all of it. And we do have customers that say, you know what? The one that got me was the kale salad a few years ago. And I remember trying to sell kale, 5 years ago, and you couldn't give it to anyone. And we used to have to hide it in things like a braised greens or a soup with greens, because if you said kale, it was an automatic menu killer. And now all of a sudden people are coming in saying, why don't you have a kale salad on the menu? it happens so fast too. And that's the other thing that gets us. It's not that it happens without us seeing. It comes up on us so quickly. Like one day it's here and the next day – by the time you sometimes get the kale salad on the menu, people are like, that's so yesterday.
Exactly. Now they want the alligator strudel. all right. So Carrie Carella, you're a cupcake entrepreneur. When did you get in? When did you start surfing that cupcake wave?
About 3 years ago.
And you're actually combining a couple of things, really, a couple of food trends. One of them is cupcakes and another one is food trucks, a
yes.
delivery system that's become incredibly trendy.
Yes. And farmers markets.
And farmers markets.
Yep.
Yes, because your food truck was at a farmers market in the parking lot of Whole Foods last night.
Yes, it was.
I beheld you. I was buying virtuous things like organic yellow squash, but I could have bought a cupcake if I were weak. As an attractive thing for you to invest your life, your time, your money, whatever, explain how you thought through the whole cupcake question.
I definitely did not go into the cupcake business because I was like, oh, this is trendy and I'm going to be a cupcake entrepreneur. I worked in a bar, Eli Cannon's, directly across the street from where my store is now. And that I learned trending there, but not knowing I was learning trending with craft beer. And I knew how to bake and I was good at baking, so I decided to go across the street and try my hand at baking. And it blew up because of Facebook, like David was just saying. And it just became this thing where every day I would post the menu. I wanted something different and unique every day. And people started coming in. And then 5 months later, we got a food truck and we started getting invited to places. And it just... it snowballed, and it still snowballs. I can't believe how busy we are, even with this whole crumbs debacle.
The crumbs debacle. All right, we'll come to that if we have time. So David Sachs, one thing you'd have to say about the cupcake craze is it's probably lasted a little longer than anybody had any right to expect, right? I mean, kale salads, you get them on the menu and people have already moved on to something. But this cupcake thing is going on and on. And I think there are probably some socioeconomic reasons for it, including the fact it's just a very affordable self-reward. You know, it goes back to something that one of the people you write about in your book, Faith Popcorn, talked about, which is at certain times not only do we want comfort foods, but we want to be able to treat ourselves to something that's not incredibly expensive. And so it's got all that going for it. But it seems to me the other thing that's happened is that entrepreneurs and people like Carrie kept innovating, right? I mean, the cupcake that was so hot when the ladies from Sex and the City were eating it, I mean, it keeps morphing and changing in new flavors. And Chris Prosperi in a little while is going to be eating something called the Gateway. We'll find out what exactly kind of cupcake that is. But one thing the cupcake was, it kind of lent itself to mutation.
Right. It's a blank slate in a way. And so you saw every possible variation of cupcake from a $2,000 gold leaf covered cupcake in Dubai, obviously, to really inexpensive grocery store cupcakes, to gluten-free cupcakes, to vegan cupcakes, to vegan gluten-free kosher halal cupcakes, to quinoa cupcakes, to every sort of thing. I mean, it was tabula rasa. And for the media, especially the food media and the magazines, that was great. Oh, Thanksgiving's coming around. Let's do a bunch of sort of orange pilgrim cupcakes. It's Christmas time. Now we can do a Christmas decorated cupcake. It's a Super Bowl. We can do a Super Bowl cupcake. And you saw and still see a lot of cupcake bakeries doing this. They'll take a theme and they'll spin on it. They can spin on a current food trend. They could do whatever sort of they want. And that's one of the reasons why it has endured. I mean, Carrie alluded to the recent bankruptcy, essentially, of the Crumbs cupcake chain, which was the largest chain of cupcake bakeries. It was since rescued by a private equity company. Everyone, all the media stories in the days after were saying, oh, this is the death of the cupcake. Finally, the cupcake trend is dead. And I was doing interviews and I said, it's not dead. It's just this company screwed up and borrowed too much money and expanded too quickly. But the reason the cupcake trend won't die and has had this longevity despite the fact that it's no longer the new thing. It's no longer novel. It's been around for, you know, almost two decades. It is because, you know, cupcakes make sense for an entrepreneur like Carrie. They're something that's very easy to get into. It's not like learning to make strudel dough for the Allegrator strudel, for example, and stretching it by hand. Anybody can make a cupcake. That's what an easy bake oven is. It's economical to get into. It uses ready-made ingredients and the barrier to entry is low and you can do any sort of thing with it, as well as for eaters, it's just a small cake and you can have any type you want. And it is that small indulgence. And so the trends that last versus the fads that sort of come in for a season are the ones that provide some substantial advantage over other foods. So, I would say, Colin, that the kale salad is probably going to be around for a while because it's like the Caesar salad. The Caesar salad had its huge moment when it first came out in the 1950s or 40s out of Tijuana. And it's stuck around. And it's just something that fades into the background. Think about extra virgin olive oil in the same way. Remember in the 1990s when that was the thing, you went into somewhere and it's like, and we now serve you a little pot of extra virgin olive oil and balsamic vinegar to dip your bread in. And everything had olive oil in it. And there were chicken breasts poached in olive oil and crackers with olive oil. And now it's the oil. It's the oil everybody uses. It's the default oil.
Chris, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say, how many of the trends that do stay are the ones that, like earlier you said, are the ones that start out in the everyday kind of thing? Like, does that make sense? Like cupcake was one of those things that was always here, right? The Hostess cupcake. I grew up on the Hostess cupcake.
Right. I was in Chelsea this weekend. There's a restaurant up the street that's serving scrambled eggs and sea anemone. Now, even if that really takes off as a trend, first of all, it's a hard thing to pronounce. But second of all, if it takes off as a trend, it means like 100 restaurants, 150 restaurants across the country. You know, there'll be two restaurants in Dallas that serve it or something like that. But Chris, what you're saying is everybody knows what a cupcake is. Nobody has any trouble saying pronouncing cupcake, and so that gives it a tremendous amount of forward momentum before the first artisanal cupcake is bitten into.
Yeah, exactly. And kale is eating as a salad. I don't know. So this is where I'm on the fence on whether or not that one's going to last, because I've been doing this long enough now to remember. Like, I thought the portobello mushroom with goat cheese was going to last forever. I liked it. But, I mean, do you remember the portobello mushroom with goat cheese? It was on every menu in America. Mm. And I haven't seen that on a menu in a very long time. So that one kind of went away, right?
She actually – Carrie makes a portobello goat cheese cupcake.
Oh, see? But, it is around somewhere.
But she calls it the family-friendly rabbit vibrator. It's very confusing. Carrie, to that point, if you were just sort of making cupcakes, I don't think you'd be sitting here in this radio studio having this conversation. You really had to innovate with the cupcakes.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that, how you had to, in a way, once you spotted or once you decided to be part of the cupcake trend and the food truck trend and the farmer's market trend, you really have had to sort of, in some ways, think about other kinds of food trends, right? What flavors are people gravitating towards?
Bacon.
Yeah.
All things bacon. And we do savory cupcakes too. So things that, like at Thanksgiving, we made a cornbread.
I'm showing her the cover of David's book, which has
with bacon,
which is a bacon cupcake on the cover. But anyway, continue.
Thanksgiving, we did a we do salted caramel too. a cornbread cake with cranberries. We stuffed it with stovetop stuffing and frosted it with, mashed potatoes and put some fried onions on top. And that was a meal. But that was our savory cupcake for Thanksgiving. Vegan and gluten-free. That's a huge trend right now, especially gluten-free. And we try to create a very versatile and exciting menu for gluten-free customers because it's difficult to find exciting gluten-free food. It's also very difficult to make. So it's, a double-edged sword with that. We also have over 200 flavors of cupcakes, which I forget a lot of them sometimes. I have to refer back to our website on a daily basis.
I don't remember that one. Hold on.
Hold on. Where is it on my Instagram account? I know I detailed it there.
So in a way, what you're saying also is that almost any dish, that Chris Prosperi could think of introducing as an entree or an appetizer at any point on the menu at Metro Beast,
it's going to be a cupcake.
You can turn it into a cupcake.
We should work together.
Challenge me. Challenge me.
But wait, I have a question then. So when does the trend become the norm and no longer the trend? Like, I have a good example like I remember in the 80s, I went to Great Barrington area and I ate at a Vietnamese restaurant and they brought something to the table called sriracha.
Right.
And it was this really weird red-colored hot sauce that no one had ever heard of. And now there's sriracha potato chips. So is that now not a trend anymore but the norm because you buy it at the local Stop and Shop?
That's a David Sachs question.
Yeah.
You know, I think it is definitely – you'll know it when you see it. There's no specific point. But I think it's when – it stops being a flavor of potato chip or it stops being written about and stops being discussed and it's just there in the background. Like salsa, you know, remember the great Mexican salsa boom of the 1980s and everything had to have salsa in it and it was so sophisticated. And now there's just all sorts of salsa and we have salsa back sort of on Mexican food, but it doesn't have to be with everything else. Or hummus is the same sort of thing. So again, when it stops getting the attention, when it stops being a topic of conversation, but it's still there, it doesn't disappear, that's when it stops being a trend and just kind of becomes part of our diet.
We should probably take a break right here. And Chris Prospero should probably eat a Gateway cupcake. And so why don't we do that? And when we come back, we'll see what kind of shape Chris is in.
Cupcake balloons, I like cupcakes that are mine. I like cupcake season, it's cupcake time. I like cupcakes of all sizes and all shapes too. And if you were a cupcake, I might eat you. So you better run, 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 little cupcake, run, 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 little cupcake, run, run, run.
All right. We're back. We're talking about food trends. We have another guest that we're going to add to the conversation here. But right now, before we do that, let's reintroduce David Sachs. His book is called The Tastemakers, Why We're Crazy for Cupcakes but Fed Up with Fondue, plus Baconomics, Superfoods, and Other Secrets from the World of Food Trends. In studio with me, Carrie Corella. She's the owner of Nora Cupcake Company. Chris Prosperi is the chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, the last person in the world that I would intentionally feed a lot of sugar to, given the fact that he's already basically Gerald McBoing-Boing, but he, in fact, is eating a cupcake right now, which alarms me. Anyway, he's a regular also on WNPR's incredibly popular Food Schmooze with Faith Middleton. So while Chris is ingesting this cupcake and then we'll sort of get a little reaction from him and Carrie, David Sachs, you know, it seems to me that we really are talking – when we talk about food trends, we're talking about a lot of different things. And we also should probably emphasize this show is based in Hartford, so we might be just catching up with sriracha even as it's become kind of, you know, the norm and kind of ho-hum someplace else. We're not necessarily the leading edge of things. But food trends are a lot of different things. Sometimes it's a specific food or a sauce or something like that. Sometimes it's a concept like farm-to-table. Chris has got a lot of farm-to-table food in here, savory food that we're going to eat in reverse order apparently after the cupcakes, artisanal pickles, things like that. So a food trend, when we say that, it's not all truffle oil, right? It's a whole bunch of different things, and sometimes it's more a concept than a specific thing you put in your mouth.
Yeah, I would say it's, you know, a symptom of our collective appetite, and it is you know, basically a marker of the way we're eating and the way we want to eat as a society. So, you know, you mentioned farmers markets and food trucks, both of which Carrie's cupcake business is involved in. You know, those are not a specific food or even a specific flavor. They're, if anything, business models. But, you know, they have changed the way consumers want to eat. And so the availability of food trucks and the rapid spread of them since the end of 2008 when Roy Choi debuted his Kogi barbecue taco truck in Los Angeles to now when there's probably, you know, 10,000 food trucks across America.
That might be a low number. I think that's probably a low number, but continue.
Yeah. You know, again, it's, you know, before that, the idea of eating food out of a truck, why would I do something like that? I can eat a restaurant. All of a sudden, it becomes something that changes your very behavior. And that's the power that food trends have. You know, it incites a craving in us and changes our appetite for things that we didn't even know we wanted.
Oh, by the way, we should say tomorrow's show is about Seinfeld, the show that changed America, in my opinion. Although the whole business of eating your Snickers with a knife and fork did not take off, despite everything that George tried to do with it. Well, speaking of symptoms, a word that David Sachs used a few seconds ago, let's go over to Chris Prosperi now. First of all, do you want to, as they sometimes say in the South, taste out that what is it really called, Carrie? What's the real name
it's
of
it? It's called the Irish Car Bomb Cupcake.
All right. Do you know – that's charming.
I know.
What – do you know what's – can you figure out being Chris Prosperi? Do you know what's in the cupcake?
Yeah, she already told me.
Oh, okay.
But oh my God, it is – I can see why it's the gateway.
Yeah.
Like, and I was telling her on the way up here that I'm not a big sweet guy. I mean, my dad's a French pastry chef. I grew up inside a pastry shop. You know, I don't go to desserts that often. But wow.
Thank you.
A mouthful.
Thank you.
So you tell me, what is in the?
It's a chocolate Guinness cake. It's filled with Jameson laced chocolate ganache. And it is frosted with a Bailey's cream cheese frosting.
Oh, wow. So
that's the bartender coming out.
I was going to say. I was a bartender for 18 years.
This is a cupcake you would probably have to declare at your next 12-step meeting. You know, I've been sober for 30 days except for the cupcake I ate.
Except for that car bomb.
Well, I have so many different questions to ask about all this, but I also do want to add one more voice to the conversation here. Although before I do that, so David Sacks, I think, you know, so much of what we're talking about here, sometimes food is just a food and we like it and it takes off and who knows. I mean, sriracha has been around for forever. You know, I mean, if you eat pho or whatever you're supposed to call it, I mean, it's always sitting there on the table. It's been sitting on the table for 20 years in Vietnamese restaurants. Suddenly it takes off. Everybody wants it. Everybody loves it. And I don't think that necessarily says a lot. Maybe you feel differently about us as a society or, you know, where we are right now or anything like that. It just maybe just sort of an arbitrary food fetish. But some of the things that you're talking about really are statements about where the country is right now or, you know, where as a society, at least a certain group of people are. People gravitate towards a food trend, as you say, maybe after 9/11 or something like that, because it answers some hidden and basically invisible need.
Yeah, and you know, to your point about sriracha, I mean, even that says something about where we are. 20 years ago, it didn't become a mainstream thing because people still regarded spice as something that was a little scary and foreign. And then came Tabasco, and then came the Mexican salsa boom, and Chipotle and all the things that followed it, and now we're ravenous for whatever sort of hot spice and different flavor we've seen. It shows that, you know, Americans and North Americans have been traveling a lot more to Southeast Asia in the past 20 years than they were in the, you know, decades before, when it was really, I mean, just, you know, soldiers going over to Vietnam and doing R&R in Bangkok. It shows the influence of chefs like David Chang, who, you know, opened his Momofuku restaurant 10 years ago this summer and introduced sriracha sauce as one of the main flavors very early on. Again, you know, that influence of a very high profile, influential creator chef has trickled down to the Subway sriracha chicken sub. So, you know, as much as we may think that a lot of these things are arbitrary, and occasionally they are, you know, so much of our energy and our time and our income goes into what we eat, that those choices are extremely powerful and they tell a very important story about where we are as individuals and where we are as a society.
I have so many places I want to go with this, and I'm going to bring aboard our next guest in just a second here. I think we can't discount let me just tell a very quick story, and I'll do it as fast as I can. So a lot of times I moderate the Connecticut Forum, and the Connecticut Forum gets these incredible people to come in and talk. And so, I mean, I've been on stage with Kurt Vonnegut and down in Delaware with Salman Rushdie and, I mean, you name it, just gigantic figures of American culture, American life. The people who put together and voiced The Simpsons, I did a whole thing on stage with them. I was on stage with Morley Safer and Leslie Stahl and Andy Rooney. But when I moderated one with Alice Waters, Duff Goldman, who's the ace of cakes, who I never even heard of, and Anthony Bourdain, that was when people were coming up to me and really trying to prevail upon their relationship with me, not to get free tickets, but they had to meet this person, whoever the person was, whichever one of those three people, they would say, I have to talk to Anthony Bourdain. I need to talk to Duff Goldman. He made a cake that changed my life. And I'm thinking, a cake that changed your life? On TV, you saw a cake that changed your life. That doesn't make any sense. And it was sort of at that point, and that was 5 or 6 6 years ago, I realized food has become a lot more like sports. Like people have these irrational attachments, you know, to the Boston Red Sox or to, you know, the Green Bay Packers or whatever. I mean, they don't really make any sense. And once they make those kinds of attachments, they become absolutely crazy. And I do think – I mean, Chris Bosberry, you must have noticed – I was in New York with my son and his girlfriend this weekend. They wanted to go to Chelsea Market because they know the Food Network is upstairs.
Yeah.
I mean, this is – it's like you're saying, you know, John Lennon is upstairs or something. I mean, the way food is on television now, so different from the Galloping Gourmet and Julia Child, right?
Yeah, and I think you're – the one missing piece, we all eat. Mm. Right, and all those other forums that you did, I mean, I love 60 Minutes. Not everyone likes 60 Minutes. So, right, you're going to be – you're going to gravitate towards that if that's something you like. But with food, we all eat. We all love food one way or another, and we all have fond food memories. So I think that's why it sort of propelled to the top, right? Because it's something that we can all talk about, we can all relate to, and we all have a mom, you know, that maybe cooked for us and made us a special cupcake, which is where, you know, when I eat this cupcake, that it's funny because with food, that's what it does. This brings me back to like my being a child and my birthday. My mom used to bake us cupcakes. Uh-huh. Right? So that – I mean, right? So what other things do you have that kind of connection with?
I want to bring into this conversation Susie Badaracco, who is a toxicologist, chef, dietitian, and the president of Culinary Tides, a food trend forecasting company. So, Susie, now you know you're broadcasting out in the hinterlands. You're out in Hartford where we're still really excited about cupcakes. You live in a world where people are mortally tired of the cronut and moving on presumably to some other portmanteau food word. So I guess maybe just we could sort of start there, that what's hip and hot and happening in New York and L.A. and what's going on in Middle America, aren't those two pretty different things?
It can be, but trends are not always born on the coasts. Mm. So, for instance, the Nordic food trend right now, Scandinavian food, Denmark food, that trend that's going on.
Oh, that trend.
It's hard. It's actually Minnesota, upper Midwest. Mm. Because that's where our Scandinavian population is for the country.
Wait a minute. So, we have to back up. There's a Nordic food trend? I had no idea.
Oh. There is a big Nordic food trend going on right now.
Oh, my God. There's herring in every trade pub I'm reading right now.
Yeah.
and herring's been around forever, but where'd that come from?
Do you make a herring cupcake?
This week.
This week. And David Sachs, that's sort of in your book too, right? I mean, what she's saying right now, you don't necessarily know where a food trend is going to arise.
Yeah, and I think it's actually quoting Susie in the book, as far as I can recall, or one of her colleagues who are professional food trend forecasters. You know, because of the internet, because of what we talked about before with the cupcakes, things can spread from very isolated places. You know, once you had to hear about a food, go to that restaurant or go to that shop, taste it, and it would perhaps get written about in the local newspaper. So it often happened to grow out of New York and Los Angeles, where the newspapers were the national papers. But today, someone in Hartford can start something like Chris at his restaurant. Maybe he will make the Kobe chicken that you've talked about and dreamed about all these years. And it can get picked up on whatever the local food blog is, and then that'll get picked up on a national food blog within, you know, the span of minutes, and it'll be on Twitter. And all of a sudden, there'll be chefs in Kyoto who are, you know, going and Kobe and sort of saying, ah, we can perfect this dish. We can make it more efficient, more bureaucratic. And so that's what you saw with the cronut. I mean, it did start in New York City, but within the matter of weeks, that food was everywhere and was being replicated in every city in the world. And the same with this new Nordic cuisine. You know, Copenhagen, Denmark is not exactly the world's capital of anything except, I don't know, liberalized marijuana laws and really heavy bikes. And all of a sudden it's, you know, where the best chefs in the world are going to train and get their influence. So it has changed. It's no longer as top down or as hierarchical as it once was. And that makes it exciting, but it also makes it much more difficult to predict food trends out of what Susie likes to call sort of the chaos that's out there.
Well, Susie, there's so many things. I mean, we could do 8 shows instead of the one that we're doing now. But one of the other things that I notice and I think is in your work a lot is the notion of sort of even the form of food migrating. For example, if I said to you, cocktails are the new entree or something like that. You probably know what I was talking about, right? All kinds of things that used to go into salads and appetizers are going into glasses these days.
Yeah, one of the cute names for it is garden to glass is one of the names of it, mm-hmm. where the kitchen is moving into the bar, basically. And it's a two-way street. The bar is also moving back into the kitchen, you know, alcohol going into lots of foods as a seasoning. But, yeah, absolutely, you're finding drinks with grilled cheese sandwiches in them or beef brisket hunks in the drink. I mean, it's they're literally being served as either snacks or meals.
I feel that in my laughter, I'm revealing myself as a Hartford yokel. I'm laughing at something that's probably really cool, actually.
So you've never had an Irish car bomb Manhattan? It's basically a Manhattan with an Irish car bomb cupcake stuffed into it.
Or it will be now.
Yeah, it will be.
Yeah, no, I do. And for years, I've been doing what I call a crab cocktail. And it came.
Oh, I've had that actually.
Yeah. And what it is is I was late serving brunch and my wife was setting up the bar, right? And I was supposed to make this crab salad and I was late and boom, I stole her Bloody Marys and I put it in my crab salad and I came up with a Bloody Mary crab cocktail and it's been on the menu for years and people love it. So you're eating your drink.
Yes.
And so, you know, Susie. Also, we have a chef, I think the most innovative chef that I know of, Chris Pasbury notwithstanding, the most innovative chef that I know of in Connecticut is a guy named Bun Lai who runs Mia Sushi, who does things like he's now serving invasive species. He's figuring out,
invasivores.
Yeah,
yes.
We have invasive species. Oh, there's actually a term for that?
Invasivores, yeah, it's a big trend. It's happening all over the country. Florida is one of the number one hits again for that trend. It's the birthplace. It's the lionfish that they're serving down in Florida. But again, see, that trend did not start in one of the big cities. It started down in Florida by Miami and some of the smaller places down there.
Yeah. Okay. I thought I was really going to sort of bring
bugs,
up this really.
Bugs, though? Really?
Bugs?
Come on. Bugs?
Well, Susie,
that's... He does bug sushi.
Yeah. He does bug sushi.
And what's fun about invasivores is it's not just animals like the lionfish or some of the carps coming in. It's also plants that are invasive that you can eat.
Yeah, no, he's serving those things too at Mia. And it is sort of interesting because my son Joey, who really admires Bun and watches the Food Network and stuff like that, he still has sort of a threshold about what he will eat and what he won't eat, but he won't not eat something that Bun Live serves. So I've watched him eat bugs. I've watched him eat all kinds of things that I absolutely know. And some of that, David Sachs, back to that, is charisma, right? One of the things that happens is that chefs, the new generation of very charismatic television or in Chris Prosperi's case, radio-friendly chefs, they become, just by the strength of their personalities, spreaders of these trends.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody's eaten at an Anthony Bourdain restaurant in, you know, I don't even know when the last time he stepped behind the stove was, but he's a fantastic personality. And yet his tastes for sort of nose-to-tail eating, let's say, which is something that he championed early on, has influenced a whole new generation of chefs. And, you know, talk about celebrity. I was on a TV show with him when he came here to Toronto and I sort of showed him around for an afternoon. And, I know people who are actual honest-to-God movie stars. And, yeah, someone would occasionally stop them. This was like they were beating back crowds. It was an incredible thing to see. And so it's true in this age where, you know, a chef will talk about their brand and, you know, work with a publicist within 2 years of coming out of culinary school. It is that strength of personality. And that's also what gets you these dishes like bugs and invasive species, things that may not be what you want to eat on average, you know, every weeknight or every Sunday night when you go out for dinner, but they make great headlines and they get great attention.
All right. Do you want to add something?
I was just going to say, but there's a lot of, you know, like Bun always says, we're one of the few countries and cultures that don't eat bugs. So I don't know. Maybe he's got something.
All right. Let's let's take a little break. Oh, we'll come back. We'll finish up this conversation. And so stay with us.
What's the soup du jour?
That's the soup of the day.
I know that, but what is it?
In Esperanto, la supo de la tago.
I give up. Today's show was produced by Lily Tyson, Betsy Kaplan, and me. Our interns are Lily and Allison Ehrenreich. Greg Hill appeared in the intro and tweets for us at WNPR Colin. Katie Tolarski is our executive producer. The part of Bill Curry was played by Mr. Bacon Pants. For articles, show pages, and videos of the Faith Middleton Show staff worshiping a graven idol of Alice Waters, visit our website, WNPR.org. On tomorrow's show, Seinfeld, the comedy that changes the way we live. And now, back to Colin.
All right. If you had read David Sacks' book, The Tastemakers, Why We're Crazy for Cupcakes But Fed Up with Fondue, you would know that Mr. Bacon Pants actually is the name of a blog. There actually is a blog called Mr. Bacon Pants, and it's hardly the only bacon blog that he mentions or that there is. So much to talk about, so little time, but I do want to go through a few things here. David Sacks, we have a limited amount of time to talk about this, but you know, we're talking about things that kind of arise organically, not organic food organically, but sort of on their own with very little pre-planning. But one of the chapters of your book, you really sort of do get into big data, right? And big companies, they can't just suddenly think, well, let's put out a cupcake that tastes like Bailey's cream and Guinness and give it a mildly provocative name and hope for the best. They are using big data and probably in very, very sophisticated ways to figure out whether or not Susie's Nordic Brazilian something or other is really going to work with consumers.
Yeah, and actually, Susie is the person that they turn to do that. She works with big data. That's exactly what Susie does. She pulls, I think she said, 2,000 points of information from agriculture figures and sales trends to immigration figures and travel statistics and, things that are coming up on searches and health and wellness studies that are popping up, pulls all those together and aggregates that information through algorithms to sort of say this is where trends are heading. To huge companies like McDonald's and Nielsen and Cadbury's and people making Doritos, they're when they're betting millions, if not tens of million dollars at the launch of a product, they want to make sure that it lands right, which is why they're seldom the ones to sort of start a trend. They'll jump in months or years after it's sort of initially had its popular debut in restaurants or independent businesses.
So Susie Badaracco, it's your fault that we have the McHerring at McDonald's now.
And not in this country, we don't.
No. Well, but I wanted to ask you this. I mean, even just pick something like this Nordic food trend, which I'm now talking about as though I have some knowledge of it, which of course I don't. But do you see that as arising simply as a food trend per se, or is it located in a whole bunch of other points of reference? In other words, everybody seems to be reading Nordic detective novels these days. Some of those novels are turned into TV shows and movies, and so we have Dragon Tattoos and Wallander and all this kind of stuff. And there may be other ways that you can see it too. In other words, this stuff, it just doesn't stay in the locus of food. It seems to me it connects to all kinds of other data points.
Yeah, Nordic food wasn't. The Nordic food trend was not born in the food industry. In fact, if you want to see a food trend's birth, you don't look at the food industry. Nordic food trend happened to be born in the travel industry. So it's been going on in the travel industry for 2 years before it ever hit the food industry. But you're right. For something to be born, it has to have two things. It has to have a champion, something or someone carrying it forward, and it's got to tie into other existing trends that are already on the ground running. So Nordic food, not only was it was born in the travel industry, moved into the food industry, but it also has multiple other ties. It ties to Hollywood. Once Frozen, the movie, came out, mm-hmm. that further propelled the Nordic food trend. Norway travel numbers have gone through the roof just because of that movie. In the news, when the icebreaker that got stuck in the ice with all the little passengers, and then the second icebreaker came to save it, and then it got stuck, mm-hmm. that also propels the Nordic food trend and the Arctic food trend. Just odd news bits like that, and Hollywood can be very influential. Travel industry is very influential. Wine industry can be influential in being supporting trends to the main player that's in the spotlight. Mm. So we don't – one of its Achilles heels, though, is we don't have a huge Scandinavian population in this country. That's why it's really home-based up in the upper Midwest. Its strongest point in this country is the bakery end of industry. All the breads and sweets that are coming in, that's where Nordic is the strongest right now. It's not in the crazy fish that they have yet. It's, it's kind of in the safer, calmer end.
Lutefisk will never take off. I can guarantee you that. But this is an interesting point. I mean, actually, I want to use the remaining time. I've got about 5 minutes left to kind of go round robin and just sort of talk about the next thing from each of your points of view. So during the break, Chris, I asked you, do you know what the next thing you're going to introduce your diners to? And you said, well,
yeah,
go ahead.
One of the things I was looking at was herring, because I learned a lot about herring this year because it was in the news a lot. But when it's first caught and that fresh herring and what people do with it, and that's one of the things that I'm probably next spring going to look into. And the other is ramen,
mm-hmm.
right? Because ramen is everywhere. And who – again, and you have an attachment because everyone went to college. Everyone didn't have money and everyone ate ramen. So now they're using it as a breading. So maybe I'm playing with maybe chicken wings breaded in ramen noodles.
Well, how about herring? Herring breaded in ramen. You got the whole thing wrapped up there. All right. And so I also feel for you – Carrie, as a cupcake maker, it's like a shark, right? If you stop swimming, you die.
Yes.
So you have to keep changing. You have to keep innovating.
Yes.
So what are you going to do?
We are still going to be creating cupcakes, daily. And we are also making marshmallows now. We're making our own marshmallows, and we're making all different flavors and maybe some boozy marshmallows to go into the mix. And we have a trailer that is going to be traveling around and making your own s'mores. So we toast on site.
David Sachs' indie band is called the Boozy Marshmallows. David, I'm going to go to you last just because I want to make sure, because Susie really knows, and some of it's proprietary information that some huge corporation owns right now. But in terms of what you can really tell us, Susie, what are we going to be eating, say, in New York, at Trestle on 10th and Chelsea? What are we going to be eating a year from now?
Well, some of the bigger categories right now, Peruvian food is hot, but it's being replaced now by Brazilian foods and flavors coming in. Also, the dessert category is kind of being dominated by anything frozen or anything ice cream-based that usually will have alcohol in it. In the bar scene, anything you can do with ice or bubbles. If it can Everfess a drink, do that in the bar scene. So there's a lot of ways we can go. With the protein, I would go for the trash fish, the invasivores, and then the heritage meats like rabbit coming back in, goat coming in, some of those more unusual meats, bison, elk. That's where the
jackalope,
kind of the
definitely.
Protein is.
And just very quickly, because I want to make sure we have a minute or two for David. But so when Brazilian comes in, I mean, is the World Cup once again to go to?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
World
a driver.
Cup and the Olympics.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what's pushing it in more into the spotlight than Peru has, and Peru's been in the spotlight for years. It's kind of going into the background a tiny bit while Brazil gets pushed forward.
All right, so David Sachs, we just heard from the Delphic Oracle of food, so it may be difficult for you to top that. But in terms of what you predict, what you're watching, what you're interested in, are there any things we've left out so far?
I think, again, the ethnic food, we talk about the rise of Southeast Asian and Sriracha. Indian has never really caught on in that big mainstream way, but I think you're seeing a lot of sort of attempts at Indian-style fast food or hipster Indian in America now. There's one restaurant very close to Susie in Oregon called Bollywood Theater, which, it finally has sort of hit that formula and is really popular. So I think there'll be a lot more masala and dosas that you're going to see kind of creeping into places where you didn't expect them, perhaps even in cupcakes.
Yep.
And I also think, Argentinian style or South American style wood-fired barbecue, cooking over wood, cooking over live fire, live
coals.
Yeah,
live fire is huge.
Yeah, that's going to be more and more mainstream.
Yeah.
And so when you're roasting your herring, it's going to be cooked over embers in a restaurant. It's not going to be cooked over gas.
Yes, doing the wood-fired cupcake on the food truck is going to be a little bit dangerous. I think
the s'mores
could absolutely work. The only thing that I can contribute to this is that while we were in New York last weekend, we did eat crispy duck necks, which makes me think that nose to tail could be bill to tail will be the next.
We're just going to run. I mean, eventually you get. get to the tail and you get to the nose, there's nothing else. So it'll be like the breath.
You'll eat the breath of an animal. You eat the thoughts of a duck. All right. Thoughts of a Duck is also an indie band, but we have to go. Thanks very much to all of our guests here today, especially to Lily Tyson, who pulled this show together, part of our Fab Five intern class.
I'm Kyahn Wolf. There's this weird new food trend that people are doing here at WNPR. They're naming their food in the fridge. This one is a lentil soup named Greg.
Yeah, that was my soup.
I could use a little more cayenne.